This is Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. We begin with a jam-packed news day in the nation's capital, where House Democrats are expected to vote soon on a resolution condemning hate speech. This after one of their own, Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, tweeted remarks that some consider anti-Semitic. Also, former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort will be sentenced this hour for bank and tax fraud. All this with Washington reeling from the revelation that Senator Martha McSally, the first female fighter pilot to fly in combat, was raped during her time in the military. WBUR senior Washington news correspondent Kimberly Atkins is in the Capitol and joins me now. Hi there, Kimberly.
Hi there.
Let's start with the Democrats' resolution on hate speech, and I'll just fill in some quick background. Omar recently criticized Israel supporters for a, quote, allegiance to a foreign country. She previously said that support for Israel is a, quote, all about the Benjamins, as in money. Some accuse her of using anti-Semitic tropes about greed and disloyalty to the United States. So Omar is the reason for today's action in the House, but we heard Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, say earlier today that the resolution won't single her out.
It should not mention her name, and that's what we're working on, something that is one resolution addressing these forms of hatred, not mentioning her name, because it's not about her. It's about these forms of hatred.
So, Kimberly, if Ilhan Omar's name is not in the resolution, what do we know about what is in this resolution?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This resolution goes out of its way to condemn all forms of bigotry. It talks about anti-Semitism, but it also talks about anti-Muslim sentiment. It talks about bigotry against minorities. And it mentions even some specific instances, such as the Charlottesville rally in 2017 and last year's attack at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pennsylvania. It sort of tries to condemn all forms of hatred. It does not name Congresswoman Omar specifically. And it's done, it seems, in a way to get as much support, as many yes votes as they possibly can on this measure after the first draft of it, which was not as broad, caused a lot of members of the Democratic caucus to push back earlier this week.
Right. And one of the people who pushed back early on that narrower version of the draft was our own Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. She's been skeptical of this resolution. She's defended Omar. What's her argument, Kimberly?
Yes. I mean, she pointed out a few things, and she and other lawmakers have done this, too. She's not alone in saying, look, there has to be space within the caucus to discuss issues. In this case, I think there is a fear that anyone who questions U.S.-Israel relations will be tagged with the label of anti-Semitism and then will somehow be rebuked for that. Congresswoman Pressley also points out the fact that Congresswoman Omar has been the target, she and her family have been the target of really strong anti-Muslim sentiment even before she took office, and that is just as big of a problem than anything that this resolution was, anything that prompted this resolution. So there is a sense, look, in this case, it's different than other claims of bigoted statements because it does involve a policy, a U.S.-Israel policy. This is right in the purview of members of Congress to address and deal with. And there is a concern that there will be less room in order to speak about that issue without being tagged as a bigot.
And Kimberly, I understand that you caught up with another member of the Massachusetts delegation before coming on air. That was Congresswoman Catherine Clark. What did she have to say?
Yes, Congresswoman Clark, who is vice chair of the caucus, so clearly deeply involved in all of this, she made the point that, look, discussing these issues are important. Discussing anti-Semitism and other forms of bigotry is important, is difficult, it can be uncomfortable. But she praised Democrats for being the ones who were having these tough conversations. She pointed to President Trump, someone who is accused on a regular basis of saying things that are hateful, that are bigoted, misogynist, anti-Semitic, and other things. And the Republican caucus is really not holding him accountable, she said, at least on the Democratic side, as difficult as it is, at least they're having this conversation.
I see. So there's some overlap there in the arguments that we heard from Presley as well. And Kimberly, it just feels like the Democratic Party is sort of struggling right now with how and when to reprimand their own in the age of Trump, right? I mean, do they just stand on principle and say what's wrong is wrong, or do you engage in a sort of whataboutism game, right? Well, what about what President Trump has said? I mean, can you give us some perspective on the political calculations at play right now?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think President Trump is sort of looming over all of this. I think these conversations would be different if he weren't in office and there wasn't that comparison being made. You see a lot of people who are very upset, including Congresswoman Presley, who specifically has said not just the words of President Trump, but the policies of President Trump. She called racist and bigoted, particularly his immigration policies, and that it was a real problem when you're focusing on something like this, when those things are playing out at the same time. It's really difficult not to make those comparisons given what's going on.
One other big story in Washington right now, Kimberly, we mentioned at the top that this hour, Paul Manafort's sentencing hearing will begin. He faces up to 24 years for bank and tax fraud. And we've heard the White House say over and over that these crimes have nothing to do with the president. But realistically, I mean, can President Trump escape any political cost if his former campaign chair is behind bars?
You're exactly right. Look, the president has tried so hard. He's all but said he'd never met Paul Manafort before. As soon as Paul Manafort got into hot water, he said, well, he only worked for the campaign for a short period of time, didn't play a major role. Of course, he was the chairman. He was the chairman of the campaign as it went to the convention ahead of what had thought was going to be a challenge on the convention floor to Trump's nomination. So, yes, it will be difficult for him to separate himself from whatever befalls Paul Manafort, who clearly seems to be heading to prison, likely for the rest of his life.
That's WBUR senior Washington News correspondent Kimberly Adkins. Kimberly, thanks for your time today.
Anytime.
All right, turning to another big story in Washington, Senator Martha McSally, an Arizona Republican, delivered a powerful personal testimony yesterday when speaking to the House, to the Senate's Armed Services Subcommittee.
I am also a military sexual assault survivor. But unlike so many brave survivors, I didn't report being sexually assaulted. Like so many women and men, I didn't trust the system at the time. I blame myself. I was ashamed and confused. I thought I was strong, but felt powerless.
McSally was the first female fighter pilot in the country to fly in combat. Joining us now is former Massachusetts Representative Nikki Tsongas, who made fighting sexual assault in the military a priority during her time in Congress. Congresswoman Tsongas, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you.
Well, so as I just said, I mean, this was a big priority of yours while you were in Congress. And I just wonder what was going through your mind when you heard Senator McSally talk about her experience yesterday.
Well, I give her great credit. You know, given her role as a United States Senator, you know, and to bring her all the power that represents to this issue by telling her own personal story, her experiences as she sought to serve our country, I think does great honor to all those survivors who come from more modest situations, who fought so hard to be heard, and to now have her be a voice for them as well as for her own experiences, I think is so important to the issue.
Well, the awful reality is that McSally is far from alone. According to a Pentagon report last April, there were more than 6,700 sexual assaults reported in the military in 2017. That's actually a 10% increase from the previous year. And among those who reported an assault, 58% said they faced some sort of backlash within their unit. So, Congressman Tsongas, I mean, we know that maybe this is a higher reporting rate, not necessarily a higher incidence rate, but it's still alarming. And why is it so hard to make progress on this issue?
Well, it's definitely a work in progress. I think it requires a culture change as much as we've initiated and instituted a lot of reform. So, for example, the survey itself is a reflection of some of the work we've done so that we won't be blindsided on a sort of arbitrary basis with information about how often these assaults are occurring. We've worked very hard to bring more transparency to it so that we members of Congress can continue to address it in the specific ways where we see shortcomings. So you have to hope that the survey itself is bringing a more regular oversight to these crimes themselves, the issue, and that in some instances that the other reforms we put in place around the Uniform Code of Military Justice, retaliation itself is now a crime, not a simple crime to prove, but nevertheless a crime, that all of these reforms are encouraging people to come forward, that the numbers themselves, I hope, have stabilized, but that more people are more willing to bring their claims forward because they have more trust in the system. I think Senator McSally even alluded to that. She was a member of the House Armed Services Committee as we moved ahead on legislation on a yearly basis. And my hope is that were she in that terrible situation today, she would have more confidence to move forward. But the reality is that this is a work in progress. There's much work to do. There is a Military Sexual Assault Prevention Caucus. I co-chaired that. It's now with the Congressman Mike Turner from Ohio. There is a co-chair now from California that will continue to work with him. So this is a issue that will be addressed on an ongoing basis, but clearly still work to be done.
McSally did indicate the changing attitudes were one of the reasons why she's willing to talk about this now. I want to play one more piece of tape from that hearing yesterday. You know, she said that she initially resisted telling anybody about what had happened to her, but when it seemed like the military was actually going to be serious about fixing this problem, she decided to come forward.
I was horrified at how my attempt to share generally my experiences were handled. I almost separated from the Air Force at 18 years over my despair. Like many victims, I felt the system was raping me all over again.
So, Congresswoman Tsongas, I mean, how typical is that experience, both the initial reluctance to come forward out of that fear and also the new attitude that perhaps the system is beginning to work?
I think it's very common. You know, I describe this as a series of betrayals. So, first of all, you have young women and men who seek to serve their country, go to war if necessary, and end up being betrayed and grievously harmed by their own. That is the initial searing betrayal that they experience. Then the command structure historically would too often turn a blind eye or not take it seriously or not know how to take it seriously. So that was another betrayal. Then because of the nature of the units and the sort of need for cohesion and everybody working together, too often peers would retaliate simply to those who came forward, blaming the victim rather than holding accountable the perpetrator. And then we saw all too often the many ways in which the Uniform Code of Military Justice just did not bring justice to survivors or hold perpetrators accountable. So we initiated some really important reforms there. And then finally, as too many victims transitioned to veteran status, they found that the VA was too unprepared, completely unprepared, actually, to deal with the aftermath of these assaults. So the work has been on all these fronts, and I'm glad to hear that Senator McSally and hopefully other survivors, you know, are finding a system that's more open to their complaints and encourages people to come forward, because we can't change it if it remains invisible. We simply can't. And so there's hope there. But obviously, as I said, we can't stop working at it until we just don't see these kinds of numbers.
That's former Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Take care.